We now have a women's legal center. Nolutando Ntokwana. Document number 37. Women's legal center. Nolutando Ntokwana. Thank you. Document number
37. She's unable to attend an Evan activity with permission on her behalf.
So, thank you.
Submission. Sorry, just sure. Document number 37. Very much. You'll introduce yourself. I'm sure you're not Donald Tando.
No.
Yes, your name is a giveaway.
No, my name is Naomi Lintz, and I am the branch manager of the Johannesburg office of IBIS Reproductive Health. IBIS does research in clinical and social science research in women's reproductive health. And Nola Tondo is a colleague of mine. And as I mentioned, she is unable to attend today, but wanted an excerpt from her submission to be read. So thank you for the opportunity. The Women's Legal Center welcomes the opportunity to make a submission today in favor of the amendment to the Choice on Termination of Pregnancy Act. Through its inclusion of the Choice on Termination of Pregnancy Act in its constitution, South Africa has demonstrated its commitment to women's health and human rights. The Women's Legal Center is a law center that focuses on women's rights and gender equality and has conducted extensive litigation and advocacy concerning the constitutionally enshrined rights to access health care and reproductive rights, including the right to termination of pregnancy. The amendment to the Choice on Termination of Pregnancy Act confers many of the powers previously exercised by the minister to provincial MECs. For example, the amendment will empower provincial MECs to designate health facilities where termination may take place. This function was previously exercised by the Minister of Health. The Women's Legal Center believes that this transfer of authority will improve access for women seeking termination of pregnancy by speeding up the designation process. It is also felt that the amendment will improve service delivery by increasing the pool of appropriately trained workers who can provide termination in the first trimester of pregnancy. One of the problems South African women face, especially in the rural areas, is that there is an insufficient number of trained healthcare providers authorized to offer this service. Today, 10 years after the implementation of the Act, there is excellent evidence that the Act has resulted in significant improvements in women's health, and the proposed amendment to the Act can only go further in ensuring that women have access to safe abortion services. Thank you. So I'll keep Nola Tondo's submission to that. It's clearly in favor of the amendment in its entirety. And I thought I'd also mention there were a few issues raised this morning, which some of my work touches on, namely the association of termination of pregnancy with breast cancer or mental illness, or there were some comments about the safety of the procedure in general. And I won't talk about it now, but if there's any interest in seeing further research on those topics, I have a wealth of it. So I think I've passed some to my colleagues already, and they may speak on those issues a bit later. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for the brevity, the succinctness of the presentation. We open for questions, honored members. Honorable Rabinovitz, we are dealing with the Women's Legal Center. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. I am actually interested in the last comment you made. You indicating we were earlier that there are, how could one say, there is a positive correlation between abortion and breast cancer. You mentioned that you paint a different picture.
I can't address that in one sentence. It's a bit complicated. There's a lot of research that's been done, and I think all of us are aware that research can be done in different ways. There are different study designs, and some are considered better in terms of controlling for different factors. For example, when we look at cancer generally, we want to make sure that there aren't other factors in one's environment that could be causing the cancer. If we're looking at X, for example, there could be A, B, and C also affecting the situation. So on the issue of breast cancer and abortion specifically, there have been several studies done, and just recently I think the sort of gold standard that's emerged in the field is a prospective study where they've looked at a large group of women from one time point and going forward, and the results of that study showed that there was no difference in risk amongst women who'd had terminations and those who hadn't. Some of the other research that's often cited is, and I could discuss this at length, but there's got to be some methodological problems with the research.
Teacher, your presentation in the name is the difference between the medical and surgical termination of pregnancy in a facility. Because according to page 3, under 3.1, termination of a pregnancy may take place only at a facility which A, gives access to medical and nursing staff, B, gives access to an operating theatre, that's your main problem, and C, has appropriate surgical equipment. Can you advise us how to deal with that? In your opinion, how do you want us to deal with that?
Sure, I can try. You're very right that I didn't read that section of the Women's Legal Center's submission today. The section which discussed adding specific language to the amendment which would differentiate between medication and surgical abortion. Recently, there was a discussion with my colleagues about this issue, and we decided that perhaps this wasn't the appropriate forum to bring that up. We do think that there is a difference in terms of the backup systems required for termination of pregnancy done via surgical techniques versus medical techniques. But we are in support of the amendment as it is written, and have decided not to bring this issue up today, as it might slow the process. So it's something we hope to discuss later. I understand that there are guidelines currently being developed for medication abortion, and perhaps when those are being discussed, that would be a better time.
Thank you very much. On page 1 of your presentation, this is Women's Legal Center. This is Women's Legal Center. Thank you very much. I'm sorry about that. On page 1, I think I'm right, of your presentation, there is paragraph 2. One of the problems South African women face, especially in the rural areas, is that there are insufficient trained healthcare providers authorized to offer this service. Anyway, it's not only in those rural areas.
there are other settlements that our people are living in right now, of whom one would assume again that there's a challenge to those areas, that many women, maybe they don't have information, many healthcare providers are not empowered and what if has been well trained and what if. How best can you advise us on how to deal with this situation?
I think that's a big question. I think that you're very right in stating that access to termination of pregnancies is not a problem particular to any group or any geographic region. For many different reasons, women encounter barriers or find it hard to access services. And I think that to appropriately advise on how to make the situation better, we might have to discuss on a case-by-case sort of basis. For example, if we're talking about an insufficient number of providers, then training more providers or extending the authority to provide the services to a broader group of providers is a way to deal with that. But in other places, other situations, there would be other types of guidance. Is that sufficient? I could talk more.
Trying to understand here, forgive me for not able to read. On your page 2 of your submission, I just want to understand. Yeah, I'm just trying to follow up the submission. You are saying the page 2 maybe it's coming, starts from your page 1, where under section 3 of the Act, surgical termination of pregnancy must be performed at designated facilities that comply with certain requirements. The effect of section 3 of the Amendment Act is to extend this requirement to medical termination, requiring that both surgical and medical termination of pregnancy must be performed at designated facility that complies with such requirements. The Women's Legal Center submits that medical and surgical termination are different procedures. The requirement for a facility designated for surgical to be performed safely are not necessarily applicable in the case of facility that conducts only medical termination. Imposing the same requirements for such facilities that perform medical treatment as for facilities that perform surgical will limit access. This approach will limit access to termination of pregnancy. Are you reading that with me? Where is that in the amendment here? Because that's a very significant suggestion you're making here.
Where is the amendment? I think,
I don't have the amendment in front of me and it's not cited, so I don't know the specific language. But I do know that in the original Act there wasn't. Yep. Okay, I think it may take some time for me to find the specific place, but I can speak generally about why I understand why this was included in the Women's Legal Center submission initially. I understand, and perhaps Professor Mflonga can help me a bit as well. Oh, you have it here? Okay. Okay. Sure. It says, it's the page that starts 2. The following section is hereby substituted for section 3. It's page 3.
Page 3,
I believe. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and I'll ask my colleagues who are in the room to support me so that I don't misrepresent the Women's Legal Center. But I understand that the Women's Legal Center felt that it was they wanted to recommend that there be separate recommendations for medication versus surgical in terms of the facilities or the requirements for designation as a facility where the TOP could take place. And that has to do with the safety of the procedure and the physical requirements of the procedures. They vary. Medical is a much simpler process. I'm sure you're aware. So that was the thought. That was why it was put into the submission. But I think they've decided to retract that statement now, or they've asked me to not read that section of it today so as not to delay the deliberation on the amendment as it stands. Is that clear?
So you are retracting this, no?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Any other questions on that? No. So
that's okay. So that would I be right there for that? Equally will retract as well as the recommendation that the definition of terminants is deleted. That
yes.
The entire part. Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Right.
In the Central Trust, that the WLC supports the amendment. Thank you very much, and I think we've taken note of the deletion at the rest of the submission. Thank you very much for your
thank
attention.
Thank you.
We have TTASA. When is Charlie with the submission of support?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. PPSA, we are an NGO focusing in the field of sexual and reproductive health and rights. We work with men, women, and youth in Khayelitsha, as it is one of the most disadvantaged areas identified in this field. I would just state one statement on our vision, which I'm very much in love with. We want to ensure that each and every child in South Africa is a wanted child. Hence, we support the amendment bill on termination of pregnancy. I'll just state some few reasons. I'm talking in on behalf of young people, youth, as we also run a reproductive health clinic in Khayelitsha. And in most cases and most of the time, we engage with young people. And the TOP is one of the services that we render to young people. We do not perform TOP. We run education and workshops, and we also counsel young people coming for TOP, and we refer them to the places, in fact, to one hospital that would perform TOP. And this is what young people will say. Please do not judge us when we come to demand for TOP. We know why we want to terminate the pregnancy. If we had a choice and if we had means, we would not do that. if I decide to have a child, I want a child that I will take care of and love. When I look at my child, I do not want to see how I hate myself or why how I hate life or my life experience. I want to love my child. We all know sitting here as service providers and policy makers that most of our people in our disadvantaged areas, we have lack of information around sexual health and rights. Therefore, we do not exercise our rights effectively. As service providers sitting here, we all know that, especially in the rural areas, there's lack of transportation from our communities to our clinics. There are areas that if you miss a 4 o'clock in the morning bus, you may not be able to go and access your contraceptives. We also, as parents sitting here and young people sitting here, we know that as a young person, if you are in a sexual relationship, it means that you are sexually active. You will keep it as a secret to your parents. It has been like that and still like that. Therefore, if that young person is fortunate enough to access contraceptive services, it's most likely that such a young person will be able to default, and that will result to an unwanted pregnancy. Please do not judge us because we do not know the circumstances that we live under. Now, life before the choice of termination pregnancy act. If you are coming from the township, as a young person, since we were still children, there have been some cases that as children we would call on parents to say, come and see, there's something that we don't understand what it is. And that would be an aborted fetus or a aborted child, if you may call it that way. Which means that we have exposed children, we were exposed, I was one of those children, we were exposed to something that was not supposed to be the case. What are we teaching our children? Because we are still encountering such problems. And today we are saying no to the termination of pregnancy act, or we do not support the amendment. Why should we do that? We all know that even now, people, they still access backstreet abortion. Why? Because even after the act on the choice of termination of pregnancy, we have one day hospital in Khayelitsha. You know the population of Khayelitsha. We still have one day hospital that all the communities of Khayelitsha will access. And one doctor will see 20 patients, maybe, or clients a day. That is not effective. There's a long waiting list. People, they come when they are in their first trimester. But because of the long waiting list, you end up being referred to Josta when you are at your second trimester or struggling to get to Groteskier. That is not fair. If you wanted to improve these services, the TOP program, PPA, you are saying that more nurses, registered nurses, we support the fact that they should be trained on how to perform TOP. There should be recruitment, intense training and ongoing training of counselors, because we believe that adequate counseling would ensure that there are less, if no, after effects in terms of your emotional well-being for women or young people that have undergone the TOP. And we also recommend that those registered nurses that would have been trained, and also those service providers that are still against TOP, there should be trainings or workshops around values clarification and training on termination of pregnancy. Maybe that could be the recipe in changing people's, in getting people to respect other people's views and values and not to be judgmental. In conclusion, I will still say that if we support all of us sitting here as PPASA and other organizations, we support this amendment bill on TOP, it will prove that South Africans have access to information, access to services on sexual and reproductive health, and we are also able to make informed choices regarding our sexual lives and sexual health. And that will be free from judgmental statements like, we are killing. If you are saying that I'm killing, it means you are saying that I'm a killer. And we'll be free from being stigmatized. And if there's no stigmatization, it means people, young people, will access that service free without being scared or frightened of everyone, of anyone. And we all know that in the conference of Beijing and Cairo, our South African government took a stand that all of us will be able to access information around sexual health and in, access the services provided in this field. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your submission. Questions, comments, honored members?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to find out from the presenter whether you, as a, you mentioned that you are also doing counseling to those women who come to seek for TOP. In your opinion, do you think you were adequately trained to do such counseling? And I also want to find out whether you do those counseling on one-to-one basis or mass counseling. Okay. And after you've done your counseling and then you say you refer a client to a clinic or a hospital where therapies are performed, do they continue with the counseling that you have provided to the women? Thank you.
Okay. We are providing a service on sexual and reproductive health. We have a clinic there. And whether you are coming for TOP, for contraceptives, or for STIs, you are provided with counseling and education. Now, let me be specific and talk about the TOP. There is a counseling, and our counselors, we've got trained counselors, and we also have ongoing training for those counselors. So I'm confident when I'm saying to you that they are well-trained counselors, and they will be trained and referred. And we also do follow-ups. They are referred either to Michael Mokongwana, to Joster, or to Krotesgier. And when they get there, it's not a matter that, oh, have you been counseled? Okay, you've been counseled, so let's go on with it. No service provider will be just taking a client and perform TOP without having started on counseling again, re-counseling.
Thank you. When you have 12 or 13 or 14-year-old girls come in to your clinic, how do you go about reporting? And in terms of any suspicion of statutory rape, which would obviously automatically come to mind, exactly what steps do you take in terms of alerting SAPS or whoever else needs to be, or social development, anyone else who needs to be alerted? Thanks.
I must say that it is unfortunate that we have not had a case of such a young person coming for TOP. However, young people would come for contraceptives, and they will open say that I'm in a sexual relationship and I'm not forced to do that. They are provided with counseling and education, and they are advised to have a guardian or any elder person or a parent to come up with. And the service provider will also explore with the client in cases on statutory rape or whatever that has happened. And we also, as service providers in any community, you work in collaboration or you also network with other NGOs or service providers like FAMSA, like social service, the police forum. So you'll have to do the necessary, take the necessary steps. Yes, we do encourage young people to come with a person that will support her through the process. And if they still refuse, in the case of TOP, the law, it says that you should provide the young person with that service, with or without the consent of the parent. So you are obliged.
Besides the STI services rendered to the male clients that you attend to, what other services do you render to them?
To male clients, information around sexual health, could be contraceptives, although they do not use any other form of contraceptives with except a condom. It could be anything that they would want to information on HIV as well. And we also encourage them to attend workshops on sexual health. We also have sports and rec programs so that we can link or integrate sports and rec to sexual health. It is still a challenge to have males accessing sexual and reproductive health services because they regard that line or that service only to be attended by females. So it's a way of attracting them. Also having computer classes so that your program, sexual health, it's built in your computer classes, so we integrate our programs.
I apologize because I may have missed this part of your input because I don't see it written here. But in terms of the counseling that you give, does your counseling cover not only what the benefits will be of abortion but also the risks, and then sort of in how much detail do you go on those issues in terms of risks? And basically, what is the content of your counseling?
Okay. I'm not doing a counseling. Let me start with that. But when you provide education and counseling, irrespective that it's contraceptives or it's TOP, you provide the person with information on the advantages and the disadvantages, what to expect even after you've undergone a process. So even with contraceptives, you have to do the same thing. With TOP, you do the same thing. And also, when you do counseling, you do not only focus on, if you've, after this, what do you expect? You also look at the emotional well-being of the person. You know, who can support you, how are you feeling, and all of those things. So I think we should, it goes beyond giving information on the process itself.
Chair, one need to appreciate the fact that this clinic in a township, at least it's following what the National Health Act is saying in terms of Section 6 and 7, concerning all the well-being of a human life or a human being. One needs to really appreciate that fact.
I just want to ask this question as to whether you are faced with a situation whereby a number of young people are coming to think, despite the fact that I didn't actually get it clear as to whether minors are approaching you in relation to CTOP, yes or no. Thank
you. Okay. I said that we have been very fortunate not to have minors
coming for TOP. However, for contraceptives, they come for contraceptives. Contraception is better because it will inform you that below 14 it used to be before the new bill. With that one, you would cancel the young person, and you do not. It's a very tricky situation. That there is the law, and there's a young person coming to you saying that I need the service. And if you are denying me the service and I get pregnant, you will be able to take the child and love and raise this child. But however, you have to make sure that you are in line with the bill. So what we do is that we provide information, we educate, we counsel, and then you also provide the condoms, because the person is already sexually active. You don't want the person to end up having a child and HIV. But with the methods, you really have to be very careful because you cannot provide. With the GOP, we are very fortunate because if it's a young person, you cannot deny because the law says that it's respective of age. And also, it does mention that with or without the consent. However, you need, when you counsel, you need to ensure or you need to raise up, you get to the person to think of any person that could support. An elder, if they don't want the parents to know anyone in the family or any young or old person that you feel very comfortable or is related to you. For the support, the young person will definitely need to support.
Thank you very much. Shall we end there? Thank you very much for your presentation. Sorry? Yeah? Oh, yes, okay. Thank you very much for your presentation. That's a compliment from Honorable Ngabinde for your excellent presentation. We now go to Richard Erzaman. Nurse Service. That's number 114. Assistant Director, Sexual and Reproductive Health, Metropole Region, Brooklyn Chest Hospital.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. My name is Richard Berzeman. I'm Assistant Director. I just moved jobs, actually, but I'm still responsible for the Sexual Reproductive Health Metropole Region within my new job. I am a professional nurse, a registered nurse and midwife, working in a termination of pregnancy program since 1997 in different positions. I started off assisting the gynecologist in theater in those days in the operating room when we did terminations under general anesthetic, because you must remember that those people also, although they were specialists, it was also a new procedure for them, and they had to learn to cope with that. And then I moved on to the provincial office where I was in charge of the TOP program in the province for some time, and after that for the last 3-4 years I was the Metropole Sexual Reproductive Health Coordinator. I've also been involved in with the training of all registered nurses in this province in some way or the other, with Dr. Oblas, who came a bit later. And we've been working together in evaluating students and training students and seeing that they're practically proficient. And that does not only include the public sector, it also includes the private sector, especially the Section 21 organizations, Maori Stubbs, Mosaic, and Maori Stubbs from the Eastern Cape. We've also trained their people and I've also been supporting them. The support is very, very crucial with these providers, these nurse providers, because often they work in isolation in these units and they're therefore they, I was always, between myself and Dr. Alvarez, always the link for support for them whenever they needed advice on a surgical difficulty, or they just needed to talk to somebody. I've also been involved. I'm still performing TOPs now, and I have through all these years since I've been qualified. I've been trained originally by the Reproductive Health Research Unit by Masutu Gabriel, who is now the director of IPAS. I've been involved in the values clarification around this program, and that being in institutions with groups of people or with individuals. We often, I'm asked by my department to look into a problem, doctor or nurse at a facility, and then I would go there and do a personal values clarification and try to relieve that tension. I also very much enjoyed giving lectures to the first-year students at their residence in the evenings and beginning of years for the Technicon. This has been a great pleasure to do that, because this is the people we actually really need to meet. That's the people that we really need to meet, and a lot of that is a job that is not being well done at this moment, and we're missing a huge chunk of our youth not being educated properly. The background: over the years, working closely with all aspects of the termination of pregnancy program, we experienced several barriers to the quick and smooth implementation of the COTP Act. This was mostly resolved with the Amendment Act at the time, by the induction of the amendment bill. And it was well, I thought at the time, that it was well addressed in the hearings in Parliament. The body of my submission, I want to talk about just a couple of problem areas. The first one being the issue between registered nurses and midwives. In South Africa, most nurses are midwives in any case. I would think about between 80% and 90%. But those other people that are not midwives, they are very important to our services, because they are often the people that are prepared to work in our services. So it was to our advantage when the amendment bill included these registered nurses. Of course, it is obvious that their training has not been as midwives, so therefore they need to get extra attention in training, especially in the fields of family planning, contraception, because you must remember that midwives also don't know how to do surgical abortion, so they also need to be trained. And it is a paradigm shift for a nurse to act as a surgeon in this case and perform a surgical procedure. Doctors and nurses look different at clients in many, many ways, and this is really a paradigm shift for a nurse to become a TOP provider. So the registered nurses do get extra attention. They have enough time. We take each person at the individual level, and we train them for as long as is necessary until they are practically, according to us, proficient to perform. Having said that, you must remember that a nurse in a facility is never working in isolation. She's always working within a group of health providers that forms part of a team. So there's never a situation, or very seldom a situation, where a nurse is standing alone. If there should be an adverse reaction to a treatment, without any help, this is really not happening. The only place that could really happen is where a nurse or a doctor is in a private is a private practitioner, and they have rooms somewhere where they work in isolation. But in public facilities and most private facilities, that is not the case. There's always other people around them. I must say that the the biggest thing that change to a registered nurse made for those people is that it empowered them. These are nurses that has come a different route, most probably, or they had they attended to their personal lives after their training, and now years later they are starting to work again, or they were a lower category that has bettered themselves through the years. This is very important because this has given them the opportunity to do something dramatic, which is a very empowering job. And many of these nurses have grown a tremendous lot, and it actually has made them aware that, you know, their life hasn't ended. They can start all over again. They can do some more training. They can go and do a degree, or they can do midwifery if they're interested. And it's really had a profound effect on nurses. Always these nurses will have a mentor somewhere. If not within the facility, that mentor will be available on the phone to them. And in the Western Cape, that has always been, if we don't have somebody within the facility, it will always be myself or Dr. Alblas, who will be online, a telephone call away if they should need help. And I just want to say something about the pregnant woman. We especially our emphasis in training with these people is to realize that when this client is standing in front of them asking for a TOP, that this is really the best opportunity they will ever have in their lives to have a dramatic effect on this person, young person or old person's life, the rest of their reproductive health life. Because this is where the best education can be done, where this is a crisis situation, and these people can really listen and they learn a lot through their adverse condition at that moment in time. The substitution of Section 3 of the Act, which I believe this morning was also talked about, it was written really in the view of accommodating surgical termination only. This do create some problems for the very few private providers at the moment that are performing medical abortions. There are not a lot of them throughout the country. In our province, the MSC has just made a decision to not to comply to all those point A to K, as this is not necessary for medical abortion, and they have made a regulation available that exempt people from that. Sorry about that. This medical abortion, you must also remember, is only up to the gestational age of 56 days or 8 weeks. So it is not intended for large pregnancies. It is a very small pregnancy still. So it is a very safe procedure. Medical abortion has not been approved by the National Department of Health yet, so it does not pose a huge problem to us at this moment in time. Therefore, I think that this particular issue can be dealt with easily and in a very quick manner through a regulation rather than having to change the amendment bill. Designation of termination of pregnancy services. The current regulation undoubtedly makes the designation much quicker, and I've taken this from the IPAS presentation where it says it shortens it to 3 to 6 months, where with the health minister it took really up to 2 years sometimes, and many phone calls and many letters to clear this up. And in our province, it actually will take less than 6 months. It will be more to 3 months normally. So this is a huge advantage. On that designation, we must also note that the minister do not actually just designate on request. They go, an inspection team is sent out, which can comprise of somebody like myself or somebody from head office with the necessary training, that go and inspect this premises. services, which is actually a barrier in a way, because the TOP provider who wants to go into a private practice cannot start practicing before they don't have everything together and has been inspected and then designated. So, but this is done, and then on the recommendation that the conditions in the Amendment Act 2.3.82K has been complied with, a recommendation will be made to the MEC to then designate the facility. And it's not designated. Those points in between A and K is not just taken literally. If it says that you need to have a referral method in case of an emergency, that method is in writing. We make sure that the person who is applying for this designation has actually made sure that they have. We make sure that they have a direct line to a facility and to transport when an emergency should happen. It's not taken on face value only. In our province in the Western Cape, we also do evaluation of the providers yearly to see that the standards are kept up and that people are still complying with what we would like to see. It's especially important in the rural areas where people, the providers won't do that many cases per year, so we need to see that their proficiency is kept up. If they've only done one case a month, you know, it's difficult to keep your proficiency up. So we then organize for them to go and see somebody go to another facility that has more cases once or twice a year or three, four times a year so that they can keep their proficiency up to the standard that we wanted. That is also done a lot by myself and by Dr. Oblas, who works mainly in the rural areas. The matter about the maternity units, 24-hour maternity units, you must remember that termination of pregnancy is a surgical procedure like any other surgical procedure. Nobody removes a mole from somebody's neck 24 hours a day. There's no facility that has that offer that service. And the same here. This is still a patient that needs to, a client we would like to call them, that needs to come, that needs to be a history, a medical history taken off, certain vital signs, baseline signs must be taken, investigations must be done in her medical status. We look at what contraception she's been using, is she healthy, has she got any of a number of diseases that is listed in a previous regulation, and so this takes time. There's only a few centres that has a one-day service. The rest of the services are a booking on a specific clinic day and then a booking for the surgical procedure. That also brings me to a cooling down period where the patient or the client really has time to then make up their minds or change their minds. So it is actually a built-in period of time. Obviously, often we don't have a lot of time, so we can't afford the patient 4 weeks often to make up their minds, because we work within limits of the Act, and our main objective is to try and do as many of the terminations at the 12-week mark or before. So often, and of course after 20 weeks, it's very difficult to obtain a termination, so we obviously have to reach that mark. And sometimes if a patient is 19 weeks pregnant, she has to make up her mind fairly quickly if she is going to consider this at all. But also saying that, you must remember that this woman has known for some time that she is pregnant. She has made up her mind. She has weighed up anything. She has prayed. She has wished. She has gone to sleep to hope that the problem one would disappear. So she's been through all those stages, which one could almost call the Kubler-Rosser stages of a terminal patient. She's been through all those stages before she actually comes to us. Her mind is fairly well made up, and we have very little to do. But because we also see so many patients, it's easy for us to actually detect if something is wrong there. And it's easy to detect. And then as soon as we find that there's any medical, social, mental, abuse or violence problems, we immediately refer. And nurses more so than doctors, because we feel a little bit less sure of ourselves in this manner. And depending on your level and years of doing this job, you will do it more easily, or you know, hang on and try and find out a little bit more yourself. But referral is always taught to all our students to be done as soon as you detect that something is not right. And that will be, firstly, if it's a social abuse sort of problem, it will be the social worker, and she will then, or he will then, decide where to take the patient further. I think that I would also talk about the documentation a little bit, if I may, just to say that there is very good documentation. We have a group of forms, Annexure A and Annexure A Anonymous is forms that is used mostly in the country. It differs slightly, but it's fairly standard in the country in all the provinces, which is the one is kept in the patient's folder. The other one is sent with a Annexure C once a month to the Department of Health, the head of health, where it collates all the cases of the month, be that first trimester, second trimester, or over 20 weeks, also all miscarriages that weren't abortions. That is sent every month, and it goes with the anonymous part where the patient's details are not on, name and address, and ID number, those things. So that, once a year that is sent to the national office where they collate that and hopefully put it in archives. So that is very well done. It is not something that an institution can do or not do. It is specified in the Act, so everybody is doing that. And if not, they can be found liable. Conscientious objection, a lot of talk has been around that. The National Department is actually busy with a draft document regarding that, that will, I presume, will be finalized by next year. I'm sorry that I talk for the National Department now. Consent is very important to us, because we often have to make sure that consent is what the woman wants. And this is especially important with the young, especially when the young is accompanied by either a parent, a guardian, a grandmother, a family member, sister often, or a boyfriend or a partner. Because of the fact that the act is only the consent of the woman, it means that we must make sure that the consent comes from the woman. So, and this is a very difficult problem. It's a very difficult problem for everybody that does counseling. It is often clear that the child of 12 cannot have a baby because she has no means of looking after that baby. The parent wants that abortion, but the child does not. So then it takes a lot of time and a lot of extra counseling and going to a social worker to weigh that up to the child, as one of the speakers said yesterday, because the child is psychologically not ready to maybe appreciate all the consequences of this decision, to make up their minds about this particular decision they have to make. But finally, if the child still do not want the TOP, we will then send her away, because that is what is legally required from us. But it's terrible to sit there in front of a parent that you know that the parent will have to take charge of that child if it is born. And having said that, I also want to inform the members that they must realize that having a live birth is many, many times more dangerous than having a TOP. And in fact, there's very few conditions that will not, medical conditions, that will not improve with having a TOP. And that includes HIV/AIDS and TB and all those other terrible diseases that we are faced with daily at the moment. Remember that remember also that all doctors and nurses are basically trained to handle emergencies, so that we have a basic knowledge of that, and it is, the onus is on you as a registered person, be that with the medical council or the nursing council, to keep that competency up. And hopefully all of us are doing that, so that we can handle emergencies and we have some sort of a plan for emergencies and what to do with that. As I said before, that we're not working in a vacuum. There's always help, and there's always people that will know more than you if you're lacking in any manner. And do not for one moment presume that it's only doctors that know more than nurses, because often it's the other way around as well. Because we're living in a time of super specialization, and not only for doctors, also for nurses. I also want to say that any and every health practicing facility in this country will have emergency drugs. As soon as a person, a healthcare worker, is dispensing any type or giving any type of medication or performing any type of surgical procedure, they will have to have emergency equipment there. It's not difficult to get it these days. You go to a medical supplier, you buy two sets. One is a set that has all the instrumentation, like ambu bags and laryngoscopes and those type of things, and tubes, airways, and the other bag will have the medication, the emergency medication in, that gets changed every year so that they get up to date. If you have an emergency and you've used any of that, you will just return it to the company. They will replace the stuff and give it back to you. It's not even that expensive. So all health providers will have that. If anybody has felt that emergency help is maybe not available, instant help. Often, there's very seldom a problem with termination of pregnancies. Our rate of adverse incidences are very, very few and far apart. But having said that, I must also say that when something goes wrong, they go wrong quickly, and you need active action to get that patient to help as quickly as possible. I then would like to conclude by my recommendation that I support the Act as it stands. The one thing that we felt that is not right, and that is the section with the surgical abortion, section 2.3, I think can be easily rectified in a regulation. And to conclude, I want to say that as women still forms part of a disadvantaged group in our society, it is of utmost importance to remove barriers that would ensure their access to their rights as put out in the Constitution of 1994, Section 2, the Bill of Rights, and especially Section 12.2, which states everybody has the right to bodily and psychological integrity, which include the right A, to make decisions concerning their reproduction. Reproduction is lifted out in this document, as it is a fundamental and basic right that often is not fully available to our women, and especially the poor and those previously disadvantaged. The small group of society that opposed this, this legislation has not got the welfare of women as their first and main objective, but rather to deprive women often of their rights to make decisions. Therefore, the Amendment Act must be accepted in its present form. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Comments? Honorable Matumisa?
Thank you, Chair. A lot has been said about the reporting system. And I'm glad that you went through it. But I would like you to expand on or elaborate on the third-term reporting system in your area. How do you classify the third semester when you do your statistics? And secondly, your counseling. It has been said that women are not properly counseled pre or post. I just want to find out from you, as a person who is directly involved, how do you deal with counseling of these women when they come to you?
Remember that the documentation for the statistics is done in, first of all above 20 weeks terminations take place in our province at one of the two academic hospitals. So number one, nobody that I know of will, in this province at least, and at these two institutions, perform a termination above 20 weeks without good reason. Now, having said that, I must remind you that some years ago, when HIV/AIDS were still in the beginning phases of rolling out various programs, a pregnant woman that was HIV/AIDS positive was often a reason to request a termination after 20 weeks. Now, just to show you that technology changes quite fast, now it's not a reason anymore because we have antiretrovirals and we have programs for mother-to-child transmission prevention. So that is how technology changes and how we move with the times. The referral to a tertiary institution is not easily obtained. It's fairly difficult to do that. Those doctors are mostly opposed to deal with these cases, but obviously they're ethically bound to do so, and therefore they have to take our clients. It is then taken as a case that is handled in the gynecological department as such, where there's usually one or two doctors that deals with this particular problem at the two hospitals. It is then recorded as stated in the Act, and on our Annexure A and Annexure Anonymous, it is stated that what the reason was for that. Was it social, economical? Was it for what reason is this termination requested? It is then at the hospital, the referring hospital, obviously recorded in their medical records very well. And I do think that we can maybe put a little bit more attention to the reporting of specific cases and maybe opening a register of that, because they're not many. I doubt if there's more than two, three a month, I'm not sure, in this province. So they're very few, so it won't be difficult to trace them. And also, I think for research purposes, this might be a useful exercise in any case. We often, the most cases that we get is where minors have been raped, and because of the fact that they're minors, they do not always appreciate the problem. Also, education is not well, so they don't realize that it's timelines here, so they often come after the 20 weeks limit. If this child is 20, is 12 years old, which is the magic number that everybody talks about here, it is often felt that this child needs this procedure because this will affect the rest of her life. But people will then still go in very deeply if this is so or not. As I say, the stats is collated then, but this is not specific, and it's not case written stats to the head office, which then present that to the head of department and finally to the MSC. I think there is improvement needed there, most probably, to just refine that for people to know what the status are of those clients. The second question was around counselling. As I previously said, counselling is done. There are some institutions, depending on how they've organized their work, is doing some counseling in the form of, you know, 10 women, 20 women at a time. We've just developed a flip chart for reproductive health, which is quite large, a free form, where you can actually do contraceptive counseling quite nicely with a group of 10 people about. So that part of the counseling is always, can be done in mass, but often that is not done. Often it's mostly done on an individual basis where the provider sits in front of the client, and that client is then asked, what have you used before? Have you never used something? Because then I need to explain to you all the other methods. What are your knowledge about methods? Which one are you going to, which one are you preferring to use now? Often the method is not what we think as providers that would be suitable for that patient, but we need to abide to her choice. Family planning, I'll talk about family planning first because that is a very crucial part of this. If we don't look at that, that woman might present herself to us again. So it is crucial to us that we make sure that she understands that it is in her will, in her power, to do something about the reproductive health choices. Then we obviously will ask, well, what made you come here? Why are you here? And have you made up your mind? It is often as simple as that. Because if that answers are given quite quickly and with confidence, and we know that this person, it sounds like this person has made up her mind, we then give her the consent to sign, and the consent that we have on this is printed on the Annexure A form is quite explicit, and it explains all the adverse conditions that can occur to her. We also tell the clients that they must be aware that this is a surgical procedure. That this is still, although it's a very safe procedure, anything can go wrong. And therefore, they need to make sure that they understand what they're coming for. And that doesn't take a long time. Maybe in your first 3 months or 6 months in the service, it takes a long time, but after that it becomes quite quick to do that. And as people's confidence increases, it really becomes a quick, easy counselling to do. It's easy to see in that stage if there's any problems. And then of course you will retract and go slow, and then find out what those problems are. Can you deal with that problems? Do they have the client have time to deal with the problems? And if you cannot deal with the problems, then refer that client. I'm sure that not always counselling is done to its best, because we are all human beings and we do as much as we can in the time that we have, but I think that mostly counselling is done fairly well.
Matsimela, honorable sir.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I just want to know, on section 3, you have made mention that surgical termination, section 3 actually speaks of surgical termination only. And you further said this is, though here it is a problem, but it is a problem which can be rectified. So I just want to know as to how,
as a person who has got an experience in dealing with the CTOP can rectify the whole thing so as to assist the amendments. And second to that, I just want to know as to whether this amendment in essence will strengthen the Principal Act in relation number one. Remember, before the amendments, only a medical practitioner and a registered midwives were given powers to deal with CTOPs. Now, after the amendments, it says registered nurses can also handle the whole situation. Could you just say your views around those issues?
Okay, number one, this amendment bill delegates down to the MSC of the province the power to make regulations to make the act work better. So that is a very not a long path. If we should recall this act, it will take some years to get to this point where we're sitting today. If we do this on a provincial level or from a national level, because the minister also has the right to the power to still issue regulations to improve the act, that will be a very shorter path for the system to go than to repeal the act because of that one problematic area. Is that enough on that? You happy with that?
I'm worried about time. We've taken an hour now on this presentation.
Okay, then I'll quickly go to the next one about
the presenter himself must be very economical.
The next question was how would the act strengthen? You must remember that this act has been approved already in 2004 and it's only been repealed last year. So it has been working and it has been working well. So we are sure that if you want to call it a pilot period that we had with this act, it has proven itself as to be a good act.
You wanted to follow up, Honourable Masima? I thought we were going to follow up here because on section 3. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Look, it sounds like here in the Western Cape that you've got a very close eye on things in terms of the counselling and that it's all working like clockwork. But what I want to ask you is, if you look at the wording around the counselling in terms of the legislation, do you think that in any way that wording could be tightened up so to make it, you know, we don't have your caliber of manager in other areas or oversight. Do you think that there's any way that those words could be improved in terms of the legislation to ensure that the same caliber of counselling or the same kind of standards and checks and balances are in place in other provinces? Could the wording be improved? And then the second thing I wanted to ask you was just do you have a lot of how do you read things in terms of people feeling free to express themselves in terms of not wanting, those who don't want to participate? Are people at the level of ordinary health worker or nurse or doctor, do people have a general freedom to be able to say, this goes against my conscience and my belief, I cannot do this? Or is there a reluctance for people to say those things because they're not really sure what the situation is? Thanks.
Okay, the question is the non-mandatory. I've always read that words as to meant for the client and not for us. I've always thought that that meant that we must give it, but the client can refuse. And I think that was the way that it was written, and that was the feeling that the Office of the Act wanted to convey, is that we have undoubtedly, I don't doubt for a moment, we have the obligation to counsel each and every one. And if you do not do that, you will be not doing your job and you could be liable to be disciplined. I really think that people are reading that message in the wrong way, and if you're going to tamper with that, you are going to start all over again getting people to know a different message or the same message in different wording. And I must tell you that we are communicating all over the country through the chair of IPAS and the national department with all managers of the DOP services twice a year. And there we grapple with these issues constantly. And we sort of make sure that our managers everywhere is strengthened. If they're not, if services are not well, IPAS is the vehicle that we use at this moment in time to go to those places and strengthen that services and bring them up to par. It is not like that everywhere, of course, yet, but hopefully that would improve with time. IPAS has made an enormous difference in Limpopo province in over the last 2 years, 3 years. I don't know how many 100% the TOP services in that area improved. So it is something that we have to take step by step because, you know, NGOs don't have that much money. With the gag rule of Bush, that was also curtailed to some extent. But hopefully things are looking up and we will move faster on that. Your second question about feeling free to express themselves, I in this province, nobody has ever been forced to do something that they don't want. I have, the very first time that abortion was introduced in my particular facility, we were called together, we were asked, is there anyone that wants to participate in this program, and if not, what are we going to do about it? I was willing to participate, and with my participation, two nurses agreed to also help me, and we formed a part. I have always believed that people that are anti-TOP, and vehemently so, is a barrier to your services because they would treat your patients in a way that you don't want to have them treated. They would make your service unfriendly, and they will actually chase people away that need the service and that has the right to that service. So we have always tried to get those people. There are some people that are unwilling. You must remember that there's two factors here. There's the one factor that this is a moral and ethical problem, which people grapple with, and us as TOP providers have the same problems. We don't invite people to come for TOPs or go and collect them on street corners. They come to us, and we grapple with that. It's not always easy for us because some of these people affect us deeply, even if we've done thousands of them and dealt with them. On the other hand, this is a new program that it means that there's a new job to be done in a really already overburdened hospital or facility or wherever it takes place. And nobody wants to do a new job without extra money or without the time to do that in. So people have two types of objections here. Some of them are really ethically and religiously objecting to this program, and one can usually see that through the way that they live. It's not difficult to separate those people in a facility from the rest. And the others are there object mainly because it's a case of a new job, extra workload, and not extra pay. As soon as you start paying them extra for this job, they actually come forward and they actually do the job and they actually enjoy it because this is a very fulfilling job. It's very sad sometimes, it's tragic sometimes, but it's also a very fulfilling job because people mostly leave there having achieved what they came for.
Thank you very much. I think we should end here. There was a question. I'm sure maybe we'll have to come back to the question by Honorable Masimela. I would have pursued it. We don't have much time. She was raising that your submission says the Principal Act was quite succinct to say refers only to surgical termination. Now the current provision has conditions to A to J, and you are saying that may be onerous in terms of the private and smaller people. And the other one was the 24-hour. You are saying that nobody presents for 24 hours at the time. But it's going to be something maybe somewhere we'll have to come back
to those views that you raised there. I don't want us to discuss now, but it's quite instructive that you have raised those two areas because they are part of the amendment. In your old view, you were saying that we should rather have left it in the way it is in the Principal Act.
It would seem that that would be a better, because this A2K was actually addressed in a regulation, in a proclamation. I'm not sure what the difference is, I'm not a lawyer, but it was actually in a proclamation before. So we were dealing with that in any case, before the Amendment Act changed it.
Said a very interesting point you are raising. It's an interesting point you are raising. Honourable members, I'm not sure we take tea or Professor Mshanga submission. Oh, he's on the phone. I know he's chasing a flight at 5 o'clock. What are we saying? Tea we take? Sorry? Or we take him and then take quick tea and come back and proceed? Sorry? Okay, let's take this. Okay.